Hey folks, welcome to the show, and hello Sharad, how's it going?
It's going well, and I've started reading a few books after a long hiatus of sorts.
Which books?
Just casual reading. I've been reading Pitch Fever of late. That's a very it's a book on a football fan.
Oh nice, so that's right up your alley, right?
Yeah, except I don't really resonate with the club he supports, but sure. Yeah, it's a very casual other, outside of the typical stuff we read all day.
I mean, reading is kind of I think even half an hour a day. Yeah, but it's tough to get that half an hour a day. But yeah, one can actually progress a fair bit, right?
What are you reading these days?
I'm getting slightly into like more spiritual stuff, you know. I'm reading a bit on Hinduism. I recently got a book on the Tata Group, so that should also be fun. But like lots of backlog. I mean, a friend of mine recently gifted me a few books, so that just adds to the pressure. But we can obviously continue to talk about this, but we are here for another reason, no? We have with us Ms. Anjami Nair, CEO of Knowledge Network Solutions. Anju, I think that's the shortened form that we can use. And she, I think, obviously has been involved a fair bit on the IT consulting and strategy end of things, but agricultural technology businesses is, I think, where she has really found her project of passion. So it's great to have her here with us, and I think we'll probably have a few insightful questions, I have a feeling.
Yeah, and a lot of noise in the sector as well.
Let's wait for her to say whether they are insightful or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I preempted that. Anyways, let's get started. First of all, welcome, Anju. How's it going?
Great. Good to be here. I hope we have a great discussion today.
Oh no, absolutely. We're looking forward to it. So, Anju, why don't we just start from the start? You know, we obviously know a bit about your background in terms of how you started Knowledge Network Services, and you're also an agri tech expert. You have been associated with Yara International in an advisory capacity, which is a crop nutrition slash crop protection advisory firm, if I understood it correctly. And I think you have done a fair amount of work in terms of looking at applications, technological digital applications within the agricultural value chain. So you would obviously like to, you know, hear a bit about your journey, how agri tech became such a core focus of your work.
I think it's a pretty interesting question that you asked me, and you're very right. I've done a number of gamut of things right across, but the factor which was sort of binding all the activities and work that I've done was essentially, social impact. So my thing was always that I wanted to do things which would actually leave or have a long-term impact on society. And sort of add value, leave a legacy. And that was very important for me. And I looked at different stages. So I started with EdTech, where we talked about education and people management and things like that. Then I moved on to health tech, and where we were looking a lot on the pharmaceutical industry and fake drugs and so on. And while I was exploring all of that, it repeatedly everything was hinging around the food and the value chain that comes with food. And it was always the scarcity of that was leading to a number of things socially. And I thought that this would be actually a very, and it was by chance that I kind of fell into, or this kind of an opportunity fell into my lap, where I started getting more and more involved in the food value chain. And that's where agri-tech became a very important aspect of it, because I think in today's times, agri-tech is actually the backbone of everything that we are doing. Actually, technology is a backbone for all the enhancements and improvements that are happening in today's world. Because anything to do well, there are two things that you need, is I mean, that's the way I look at it. One is precision and one is speed. Mm-hmm. And I think technology kind of helps us to achieve that.
I mean, it's super fascinating. And agriculture, I mean, it's such a massive area, especially within the Indian context. Obviously, economically and more in terms of just the sheer number of people whose livelihood still depends on it. But it's a very complex value chain, right? I mean, you kind of start things at the farmer level. You know, their farmers require credit, they require agri inputs. And once that is sorted out, then the actual process of production starts. Then from there, the produce is, you know, taken all the way through the supply chain, through so many intermediaries, which I think suck out so much value, which otherwise would have been on the table, to, you know, take that produce all the way to big agro-processing companies, from where it gets converted into packaged food or, you know, refined food, and it comes at supermarkets. There are so many areas, right? But effectively, from a technological standpoint, the sector is also seeing a big boom. There are many companies which are, you know, getting funded, which are in, you know, for the first time, probably attracting traditional venture capital money, and not just CSR money, not just grant-based funding, but commercial funding. Which part of the value chain do you see most amount of capital going?
See, actually, to be very honest with you, you know, though everybody talks about food as a value chain, but, you know, financial inclusion has been the most important aspect. Because if you look at it, you know, there was a, in, I think around in 2017 or 2018, there was a report which said that, you know, crop yield had actually had nothing to do with, you know, actually getting, what should I say, like a good credit was not really equivalent to a good crop yield. But I think over time, the way I've been looking at the market, I think it's a very, very important aspect. Because if you don't have, like, for any kind of agri growth, credit is the most essential part of it. Because, you know, other than, you know, the climate, but if you look at it otherwise, for everything, whether it's agri input or going to the market with your goods and storing your goods, all of the complete supply chain that you have talked about, credit is extremely important, you know. Mm-hmm. Your finances and the farmer having the right kind of financial, this thing is really important. And you know that in India, we have had the RPA system where you've always had this middleman giving credit, taking advantage on several occasions. And many a times they were building that empathy and trust, and at the end of it, taking advantage of that empathy and trust. And other thing that has really come about is the kind of waivers. If you look into the market today, and even recently, mm-hmm. the kind of loan waivers which have been given in the market, it actually disturbs the balance completely.
Right.
Because number one, when you have a farmer and you've given, the government is giving, coming out with these waivers, the bank is actually not getting their funds immediately. You know, the farmer's got the waiver, but the bank will only probably receive their money over a year or, you know, 6 months, 2 years' time. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge amount of credit to, you know, to compensate for, even if it is for a short period. Then another thing that is happening is that the interest rates which the RTAs or these middlemen give are huge, you know, compared to, like, in a place like Karnal, we did a small study which was almost like 60%, which is a very, very high figure, and that was quite shocking for us. Right. But we realized that what happened actually was that there was a waiver, and now these farmers cannot really go to the bank because they have suddenly become defaulters.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, Anju, is it fair to say, like, your, you know, a core piece of your work on the agri-tech side is actually the financial inclusion and establishing creditworthiness? I mean, there's a big digital element to your work, right? So, is it sort of establishing the creditworthiness? Is that sort of a key problem statement here? Or is it actually mapping the right buyer, right, let's call it lender, with the borrower and sort of take a very finance heavy technical view on NPAs or credit ratings and credit worthiness. Is that sort of the play here to bring a sense of sophistication and organization in a very okay, and sort of how does is it tech forward? Like, you know, we use these words fairly regularly, agritech and fintech. I mean, the tech is the common piece here, but like how are you sort of marrying the idea of tech and agri and tech and finance here?
So what's happening today is we have a number of applications, and all of these applications are essentially a few of them are just being used for traceability, but I think there's a huge need, and a number of apps are addressing the issue of advisory, working like a farmer's companion, literally. And, with that, they're doing a lot of capacity building in the farmer and actually making him credit worthy. And over and above that, I think a number of, other than the big four, a lot of organizations are actually getting into the credit worthiness. Now, there are two ways that you actually calculate the credit worthiness of a farmer. Or, the whole idea that I had put out, and I think I was probably the first person to actually bring this about, was the, something that I'm calling the KYF, the Kisan, you normally have a KYC.
Right. Know your farmer.
The KYF. Right. Know your farmer.
Right.
We always thought about scoring the farmer.
Right.
And we actually did that. So through SICRA, which is like the, SICRA said, you cannot really collect information about a farmer, which would be financial information. But there is another information that you can collect, and that is the efficiency of a farmer and his best practices. What is it that they use? And what we did was we started building a credit risk model, which we wouldn't want to call it a credit risk because no financial data really is involved there, but it was like a credit risk model where we were actually calculating the farmer's efficiency.
But no, that's like very interesting. Like, what are the kind of inputs you would be using for that, Because, data is a big problem, right, at that level.
Yes. So, the data was like, I think the most important thing. So, very frankly speaking, I'll just tell you quickly, we were collecting a lot of data relating to, the kind of input and at what time, all the advisory that we were giving him. And at the same time, the way the farmer is actually using that advisory. And through that advisory, we were doing a lot of mapping of the tools and coming out with the data that would actually show us the kind of best practices that the farmer has used.
Right.
And in the process, we calculated his efficiency as a farmer. But I would like to just pinpoint something here, that a number of companies, 450 startups in the agri-tech space have started. But what is missing, today, when you look at the farmer engagement, that is what is missing. So even if you are hand-holding and you have an advisory, and nowadays people are talking about drones, you're talking about remote sensing, but what about that little tiny smallholder or the marginalized farmer? Can you actually, the current things that we have, of course, a lot of development is happening on that front. But if you look at remote sensing, can you actually look at a resolution, or does it have the right kind of resolution to map a farm which is really tiny, which is just about maybe an acre or 2 acres, a totally marginalized farmer?
Right.
Who's the person who actually needs credit? Today, if you go to a bank, he says, don't send me data of a farmer who's less than 5 acres of land.
Right.
And this is not just with, and this is not what I'm talking only from private sector banks. Even if when you're looking at, a number of RRBs, they come and, you try to work with them, and they all want a farmer who's 5 acres and above.
Right.
So what happens to this farmer, a lot of data is being collected by the government and is being given to these RRBs and cooperatives and so on. But do they really have the bandwidth to go through and really study each farmer?
Right.
So even though a number of these agri techs are coming up, but I don't think so, except for one or two where you would have done certain projects and which were successful. But can anybody really have the tangible you know, kind of amount of people that they would have really impacted or would have seen a change.
Right.
So I think what is really missing today is engaging actually with the farmer, you know, addressing communities. And I think with all this tech world, that is something, you know, you will still continue, you will have to continue to do to really be able to understand the social impact or policy changes that can be then recommended to the government or to the society to see that what is it that we need to do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting. You know, you kind of made two points here, right? One is that you kind of using efficiency of farmers in the agricultural process as some sort of a proxy for their credit worthiness. And on the other hand, you're also kind of making the point that even with all the, you know, fancy tech in the world, the small and the marginal farmer, which probably comprises like 75 to 80% of the total lot, still kind of, you know, is missed from the grid.
Totally. But the kind of work that I'm putting in individually also is where, you know, I want to study this. And we've done this with, you know, 2 to 3, actually onboarded more than 7 to 8 banks. But
right.
I would just like to kind of, you know, we're still at that 5-acreage thing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to show that, okay, this is the kind of capacity I have built with this farmer. And even though he's got 2 or 3 acres, you know, I believe that he has the ability to pay back.
But isn't earnings maximization or earnings enhancement
Absolutely.
Of a marginal farmer the key here?
Absolutely, because crop yield, I believe, is directly proportional to the ability of the farmer to repay back.
No, it's an interesting framework, right? You know, and it makes intuitive sense to a great degree as well. But at the end, we are sort of making a fundamental metric tie-in with a financial metric, right? I'm fundamental being based on even weather. I mean, there will be external factors such as even weather and, you know, other political factors, pest control, things like that. So a lot of it can be addressed through access of right credit. But it still sort of prevents, I mean, folks in the, let's call it sub 3-acre category who do not have access to credit markets the way some of the 5-acre plus farmers have. Are you not seeing a direct relationship in the efficiency of the bigger farmers as well with sort of like a relationship between the area they hold and their efficiency?
I am so glad you asked me this question. Actually, not.
Mm-hmm.
It's very funny. I know that, you know, it was a great shock for me as well. When we created our credit risk model based on the farmer's efficiency, I don't even want to call it a credit risk model. I would rather say a model where we could actually, you know, understand the credit kind of worthiness of a farmer by just looking at his best practices
mm-hmm.
or farmer efficiency. A very interesting trend that came through was we were looking at certain farmers in Haryana
mm-hmm.
and then we were looking at certain farmers in UP. And what we realized that the level of efficiency did not matter if the person had 1 acre or he had 28 acres of land. What mattered was the region.
Mm-hmm.
So a farmer in Haryana scored a lot over the farmer in UP.
Mm-hmm.
And why was that?
It was very interesting. It was like a straight line. If you plotted a graph of efficiency versus you know the actual land or the acreage owned, you would find a very straight kind of a trend, you know, where it shows that very slight increase maybe with the land because of basic mathematical model the way it was,
mm-hmm.
but the change was more in the region. So a lot of, I think, the trend or the setting or the thinking is more to do with which state you belong
to. But like when
to.
You say region, was the factor like the practices that are, say, implemented in Haryana versus the practices which are implemented in UP at a ground level, was that the differentiator? Or was there some sort of more fundamental factor like availability of water or just the, you know,
yes.
Inherent fertility of the agricultural land?
I think it was. It has also got to do with the kind of more social trends.
Right.
So if you look at a farmer in Haryana, and also the way the government had initially, if you look at Haryana, was always known as a much healthier state.
Right.
And you know, it's got like irrigation, of course, in Haryana is 100%, and it's almost the same. And you look at the basic size of the state, and then you look at Eastern UP. If you see that with a lot of you know, unrest and other things, other political reasons. If you look at Eastern UP, it's not the easiest place for anyone to go and work in. And if you look at Western UP, it's a much different kind of a trend. Though I feel that the credit market in UP is pretty good. People are more enthusiastic, more keen on taking loans because they have more deficiency of money. And when we looked at Haryana, it's a very informed, very wealthy farmer. And the trend of farmers above 3.25 acreage was a lot more.
Right.
While in UP, the marginalized and smaller farmers were many. But I would like to say, with the government doing so much more and, you know, more education, more awareness, and a lot of things that are happening in UP today, the market's looking a lot better.
Right.
And I can sense a lot of good things coming out of it.
Right. Interesting. Well, you know, like, if you kind of just, if you say step back from the government's role into like private enterprise, what are you seeing, you know, in terms of like, if I were to ask you any interesting case studies of, you know, agri-tech companies or early stage startups or even traditional agro business companies intervening at the farmer level from the standpoint of credit, from the standpoint of inputs, from the standpoint of advisory. Any interesting companies, business models that you have seen?
Actually, I mean, you know, I won't be at a liberty to talk about individual companies because I'm an advisor to a few, and it would not be nice to pit one against the other.
Sure.
And that would not be a right thing to do. But I can tell you some of the interesting things or trends that one has seen. So if you look at a number of organizations, or if you look at a number of applications which are more, you know, related to news, which are more community building, those kind of applications are doing really well. You know, but those applications which are more advisory, they do well. But I think there you need to actually bring about deeper engagement. Because that is something where, for example, if you tell somebody, okay, you know, use this fertilizer calculator, or you use this particular thing, it's going to, or you watch all these videos that a number of organizations are putting across, you're actually asking somebody to do something. And that sometimes becomes a little bit more challenging or a little difficult. But when there is a piece of news, the person would want to come and read it themselves.
Right. Does like access to technology also play a major role, in the sense that, you know, how comfortable farmers are using smartphones, how much of this content is available in vernacular languages, literacy, those.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think today most of the applications are in 9 to 10 languages. You know, people are adapting. I mean, the companies that I kind of advise and I work with have, you know, every kind of Punjabi, Bengali. They're very conscious of that. They're very crop conscious. A number of applications are, you know, absolutely, some are kind of crop agnostic, and they're referring to the farmer per se.
Right.
And some applications are very farm and the farmer,
right,
both. And, you know, they are not, so they're very pertaining to the crop or dealing with one particular crop per se, and so on. So that kind of a thing is there in the market,
right,
where you kind of have different applications trending. But I think the most important thing for any application to be successful in the Indian market needs to be more community oriented.
You mean you need kind of boots on the ground, you need folks on the ground helping.
You cannot I don't think if you just tell somebody that, okay, go please use this digital color chart, or you need to look at this, and this is going to tell you exactly how much fertilizer you need to use, right, and so on. People are using it. I'm not saying that, but the engagement needs to be a lot deeper. Otherwise, it's just a set of tools and not really an application at the end of it.
Mm-hmm. And when you say like heightened engagement, it's obviously spread across a gamut of things, right? From technical help, maybe to improve crop yield, or even brand awareness of certain products in the market, which might be helpful. But an important aspect to what you're doing is also on the financial inclusion angle, right? So generally, out of curiosity, what do you see on the ground when it comes to access to debt? Because there is a lot of historical context to debt, like especially even kids in tier one cities and urbanized setups, are not sort of taught finance at a young age. I myself know that. I mean, the beauty of debt. I mean, debt is sort of frowned upon when you're looking from a very non-technical sense, right? So, what is the sort of ground, observations like? Do people think, I need debt because I can, lever up or gain leverage and sort of grow my business? Or is it sort of thought of as a last resort attempt to save something from going under? Like, what is the mindset?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm. I think people look at debt, even especially, again, it is very regional. Mm-hmm. When you look at a farmer in Haryana, he would look at debt as something that he needs for his growth. Mm-hmm. Because as you already know, that through our KCCs, the first 3 lakh of debt that you take, it's only 3% sure. or 4%. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's already it's highly subsidized kind of a loan. Mm-hmm. Right. So literally, and recently State Bank of India had put out a loan at almost 0%. Not mm-hmm. almost, it was 0%. Mm-hmm. Because 3% was taken care of by the state and 4% by the central government. Mm-hmm. And so farmers are very keen on taking on these loans. But you would realize that a lot of them have probably defaulted at some point or the other, and that is the time when they would like to use a middleman or a Aditya or just pick up money from the market. And again, the thing is that, when they're looking at any kind of a loan, they prefer to, he's intelligent enough and wants to sort of look at just these subvented loans, yeah, and may not want to increase his the value. Mm-hmm. But there are times when farmers are looking at much larger loans. Mm-hmm. The amount is so much which the banks actually find risky. Sure. And therefore, he would actually prefer again to go to a middleman and not go to a bank. Right. Because any good bank would probably not give them on an acre of land, you will not get an exposure of more than 1.5 lakh of rupees.
Right. Mm-hmm. So these loans are typically secured on the land, or are there a lot of unsecured loans as well?
No, essentially most of these loans are only given, based on mortgaging your land.
Mm-hmm. How about financing which is secured on inventory, in the sense that on the produce yes. itself? Do you see that?
Yes, because that is the. These are those, warehousing kind of thing, which is based on that. People are saying that the sector which is picking up, but it's not totally there. But right. yes, that trend is coming through, and I hope people realize the value of it and start using that as well. It is happening. But it is very slow. The volume is not that great,
right.
but it's picking up.
Right. An interesting thing that you had mentioned earlier was that, in spite of all the digitization and the advent of technology within the sector, community level engagement needs to be spiked up. There need to be people on the ground who can, engage with the farmer. And it's not just a question of you making an app and, expecting the farmer will download it and will use it for that specific use case. But on the other end, there are, in the last, I would say, 12 to 24 months, a lot of asset-light, tech-oriented startups, we all know the names, you know, be it Vekul, be it Ninja Card, be it Deha. They've raised big ticket capital, right? And a lot of them kind of have fancy websites. They have slick looking apps. And, you know, they kind of position themselves as a pure play tech platform to help a farmer at the ground level. Is that the true picture, or you think that narrative is more, you know, kind of built suited to the audience, i.e. traditional venture capital funds, who would like to hear that kind of a story?
To be very honest with you, with my experience, I think it is very important to engage.
Mm-hmm.
So even like, you know, I was looking at this application recently, and where you are connecting a smallholder farmer who's producing certain kind of exotic vegetables with a company which is into storing, right, and then selling those vegetables. But the person said, you know, but he would still go to the farm to visit,
right,
to see what is the produce that I'm actually getting.
Right.
Is this some produce that I can actually put in my cold storage and hold it for 10 days or 12 days?
Mm-hmm.
So, right, you know, as much, I mean, very honestly speaking, I know I'm advising a lot of tech companies, but very frankly, you definitely need to go to the ground and engage.
Right.
If you don't kind of do that, I mean, even if you're remote sensing or whatever, initially, you will have to go to the farm and, you know, connect somewhere. Even if you're using IoT device, where are you going to put that IoT device?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, and even if you're looking at a simple apps like, which are very, very much catered to, to a farmer and so on. But eventually somewhere you would need to have that farmer and that touch point, you know, you will need to have one or two touch points with the farmer to really build that engagement and to be able to say, yes, you know, my application has been successful.
Mm-hmm.
There have to be some people on the ground and that touch point has to be there. I have not seen yet.
Right.
You know, again, if you look at the agri-tech industry, it is still in that, it hasn't matured. It's still in that startup zone.
Yeah.
And therefore, we don't really have any tangible kind of data to say, oh, this is the impact that this particular application has created.
Right.
Or we have been able to do this. So, you know, there is, I don't believe that there is any startup where you have large amounts of data or numbers for you to be able to show impact in the market per se.
Right. Interesting.
Maybe one or two small projects and so on. But I don't think so that we have really been able to create large amounts of impact and said, wow, you know, and especially for the smallholder market, I would say. Maybe for larger farms, 10 acres and above. Yes, I mean, go to market, all the online trading and things like that. That's good. That's great. That's happening. But what are the volumes?
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Because of COVID and sort of the impact it has had over the last, let's call it 2 years, roughly, there are some behavioral changes, at least in the urban setup, right? Like work from home being the biggest one. I mean, in fact, as you know, we used to typically do podcasts. We used to have guests over. Now we've sort of moved to Zoom. But in the agriculture setup, right? I mean, what are some of the key changes that you have seen, either positive or negative, that has come through this shift? Like, of course, there is some digitization there. But at the end of the day, like farming is such a hands-on, I mean, essential service as well, right? So are you seeing any impact from COVID-19 for the good or for the bad that can advance the engagement levels?
No, in fact, if you look at it in the first wave, the farming sector was not shut.
Yeah.
Okay. And it was for the first time in the history of India that, you know, we were, if you looked at the GDP of the farmers, it was much higher. It was above the line and not below the line. Because the pre and the post monsoons had also been very good. And farm to fork, you know, the intermediary part of it, a lot of it was removed.
Right.
Because the farmers needed to kind of sell the produce. So they were connecting directly. A lot of people within the cities made an effort to connect with the farmer directly. And so if you look at it, the farming sector did really, really well. But on the second wave, there was a bit of a downtrend. For a simple reason, because we had to shut down the farming sector as well because of the number of increased COVID cases. And so, but at the same time, food is an, you know, it's an absolute necessity and people needed that. And so the sales and everything was not that down. It was, in fact, still above the line. So the sector as such was not affected. So if you looked at the use of essential goods, in fact, I have done a small write-up on this, that the there was a great increase in use of essential goods in the rural sector than in the urban. And the increase was a lot more. So, and a lot of, as you know, they also got a lot of compensation from the government because that was a time when you also had the farmers' protests and all that. And a lot of money went into their accounts.
Interesting. You know, I was, my next question was about the farm bills only. I mean, that's the elephant in the room. Naturally, you know, we obviously politically sensitive topic, but there it kind of has broached upon things like contract farming, things like, you know, farmers directly being tapped by corporates, and on one end, and on the other end of the spectrum, we all know that this year, especially with the pandemic second wave, and you also pointed out just now, that there is a fair amount of government support which has been handed over to the farmers. And probably a lot of the government support has come through the traditional channels, right? Through the Arthiya system, through the intermediary network. So where do you think directionally we are heading towards with regard to this entire farm bill policy issue?
Frankly, I think it was a good policy. I don't want to mince words here.
Absolutely.
I don't want to sound politically correct. But I personally feel that it's a great policy. The farmer got the money in his account. A lot of the intermediaries, you know, didn't exist. And I think it was one of the best things that could have actually happened to the farmers.
So you, so you think directionally we are heading towards it?
Yes, I think we are, and I think it's a very good thing to happen.
But you know, on the flip end, you know, there's a devil's argument that the Arthiyas do have a utility of their own, right? I mean, they do have, they do serve a purpose.
Absolutely. The idea, I don't think, with the bill is to get rid of an Arthiya. I think that was not that. See, in any community, there are two kinds of things. One is, for example, you know, you are forced into labor, and otherwise you are a labor. You're a laborer. You work. And then you're forced into labor. So if you're forced into labor, not a good thing to happen. You work as a laborer, that's perfectly fine. That's your profession. Similarly here, if you are a farmer and you don't want to take, you know, you don't want to use a middleman, you have a choice. And you want to use a middleman, nobody's telling you you can't use him.
But that, but that, I think that that messaging is kind of now lost in translation,
I agree. I agree. And in fact,
I mean, you're making a very nuanced point, which I think a lot of people are not kind of appreciating.
Yeah, they're not, because I think the whole, you know, at the end of it, it's communication, right? It's communication, and then at the same time, it's propaganda. So there are, you have a good idea, but you will have people who will sort of pull you down in a lot of ways, and which has happened. In fact, I have pictures of just day before yesterday, I was on that road. Every little shack you see has got air conditioning. You have dish antennas, and these are my pictures. I've taken them myself. So I don't think so there's any farmer suffering out there. You know, and if you see it just now, a bunch of elderly people who are sitting there, and you, it's very obvious that you're getting that funding from somewhere. right? So, I mean, you know, I am not pro any government or not against any government, and I'm not here to discuss a political agenda. But it's a very simple thing that there is a bill which has been passed, and I think it's an amazing bill, and I think it's going to help the farmers a lot. And it is just the communication. I wish that whoever put this out should have communicated a bit better.
Right.
And also, a lot of policies and things which are put out there, I think the key thing is communicating, just communicating the whole thing properly and gradually implementing.
Understood.
And not just you know, putting it in your face kind of a thing, and at the end of the saying, okay, just do it. Then it sounds kind of little dictatorial.
I think that's what happened, right? I mean, it was kind of a legislation which was kind of bulldozed through without bringing all the stakeholders on the same table, and that I think probably changed the narrative over time.
Yeah, and there were people trying to change the narrative, but I think this government, I mean, whatever said and done, has done quite well in a number of sectors, and I think this change would have been an amazing change for India.
No, hopefully, as you said, directionally we are getting there. Anyways, India is a fairly complicated country, so everything here takes time. But as long as we are directionally heading there, I think it's overall a positive aspect to the proceedings here. Anju, thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure chatting with you. We wish you all the best in your future projects, and thank you so much for shedding light on this very interesting but super complicated topic.
Thank you so much, and it was such a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to share some of my views.
No, our pleasure. Thank you. Shara, this was pretty good, and we'll be back soon with another eclectic personality, I would say, from a totally different sector.
It was fun, and we are seeing a trend that despite all the sectors, tech is becoming an increasingly common theme.
So absolutely,
I'm enjoying it.
Absolutely. So with that, this is Nikhil Arora.
This is Sharad Tupran
signing off.